Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Sean Hamilton.
You strip all that away and it's still these sentiments, it's still these feelings, it's still this connection that we have with the sport, with the feeling of movement, with the ease of, you know, just putting on a pair of shoes and going, with exploring, with connecting with people and with nature and all of these things that we share. I think that that is so universal that the more people we have expressing themselves and giving their lens on these things, the more we're going to just continue to connect.
On this episode of The Rundown, I was able to connect with marathoner, community leader, and Parkdale co-captain, Michelle Kay. She was more of a sprinter growing up, but found an appreciation for distance running after joining the iconic Parkdale Roadrunners. As a leader and organizer, Michelle's been able to inspire those around her, and has been working within the run community to help raise awareness for anti-Asian hate and social injustice. This episode is brought to you by VeloFix. As runners, there's not much to worry about in terms of equipment maintenance or tune-ups. But for those cyclists and triathletes out there, and speaking from my own experience, finding a bike shop with efficient customer-facing mechanics can be a challenge. Well, now it's time to change gears with VeloFix. With easy online booking, VeloFix sends a maintenance van straight to your door and provides same-day service with a smile. Head to VeloFix.com and use promo code LARUNDOWN15 for 15% off your tune-up. And if you happen to be looking for a bike mechanic gig, VeloFix is looking to expand their fleet in Quebec. Check out VeloFix.com to apply. In this week's news, there's been some incredible results for a couple of Canadian elites recently that I'd like to share with you. First, Cam Levins ran the Olympic standard with a time of 2 hours, 10 minutes, and 14 seconds in what were not ideal running conditions. He also did so with 1 week to spare, this being the last chance to make the Tokyo Olympic team. There's no guarantees, however, as Levins is the fourth marathoner to qualify and Canada can only send 3 runners. Best of luck to Cam and the other runners as well. Next up was episode 20 guest, marathoner and Olympian, Krista Duchesne. She's been training hard for the 50K distance and just smashed the previous national record with a time of 3 hours, 22 minutes, and 23 seconds. Krista continues to push herself and perform at the highest level. It's absolutely incredible. And lastly, 21 ultramarathoners lost their lives in an ultra race in northwestern China. The race got hit with extreme weather, leaving runners to fight the elements, including freezing rain, hail, and high winds. Such a tragedy and something we hate to see in our sport. We'd like to send our thoughts and prayers to the families who lost a loved one. Make sure to check the show notes for links to information about these articles, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. I'd say a lot of people, when they start running solo. But I think the magic happens when they join a group or a run club or a run crew and they connect and are able to connect with the community. My next guest has been co-leading a run crew for the last 10 years, which is remarkable. She's a runner, she's a writer, and I'm really excited to have her on the show. So I'd like to welcome Michelle Kay.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Thank you for taking the time.
I just need to clarify. I haven't been co-leading for 10 years. Parkdale's been in existence for 10 years.
Okay.
I was asked to come on board like about a year and a half, two years ago.
Okay.
And I've been running with Parkdale for about 6 years or so, but co-captaining with Mike, the co-founder, Justin Close, and James Coca, who've been on board for a bit longer. But yeah, I joined like 1.5, 2 years ago.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for clarifying. I didn't know that, and maybe some of our listeners didn't know either. So good we got that out of the way and, you know,
yeah,
give credit where it's due. And but still remarkable that, you know, you run with them. And I thought it'd be nice to have, you know, somebody who's part of that crew on, given that they've just surpassed the 10-year mark and how remarkable that really is.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think definitely Parkdale, along with some of the other international crews, have been a crew for a long time. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's been interesting to see like how things have changed over the years.
For sure. So how have things been for you and COVID, and you know, any adjustments that you've had to make in your own life?
Yeah, I mean, I think like everybody, COVID has disrupted our lives. In a lot of ways, just kind of shrunk my circle a bit. You know, like people aren't traveling as much. You're kind of limited to where you can be on foot or on bike. You know, like unnecessary travel just hasn't been a part of my life. I've had some shifts in terms of work, like everybody, or I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people working from home has been an adjustment. Yeah. And, you know, it's tough, I think, like for everybody. We've all had some level of loss. So just kind of sitting with that a little bit and, you know, like adjusting as necessary.
For sure. And so what are you doing for work currently?
So I am a writer and editor. I'm currently just freelancing, as well as I'm a news editor at this magazine. And yeah, just a bunch of different little projects.
So it kind of sets up well in a pandemic. Like as a writer, you can kind of do that some of that stuff from home. So
yeah,
probably sets up well.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm lucky that I'm able to do that, and that, you know, like I have a computer, I have a connection, I can do interviews if I need to, I can jump on Zoom calls if I need to. So I'm pretty lucky in that sense.
For sure. So how about the training? Like how about the running and stuff? How has that been affected? Are you training for something specific? Have you kind of just took a more casual approach?
Yeah, it definitely has come and gone in waves in terms of motivation. You know, when it first hit, a lot of it was when we first started locking down. I think a lot of my running was anxiety driven. You know, getting out there for exercise was good for me, and being able to safely exercise was important, but not having races or events to travel to and work towards definitely disrupted my training a bit. So right now I'm still running pretty casually, like maybe three to four times a week. I'm trying to just build back a base again. Last summer, I actually spent a lot of time cycling in lieu of having like a major race to train for. I ended up just riding a lot.
Mm-hmm. And was that part of your like cross training regimen before, or was that something you took up more because of the pandemic?
No. So I've always been a cyclist, pretty much for, you know, like as long as I've been able to. When I moved to Toronto, I ended up getting a bike, and it was more of a commuter type of cycling. But last year I ended up meeting some people. I don't know if you know Mandem CC. They're a cycling club in Toronto. They kind of blew up last year, and I ended up meeting Chris through my friend Melissa, and he had organized a few group rides throughout the summer. Majority in the city. So it was just like getting people out, and, you know, we were able to safely ride in a group. So we did that. And then I ended up doing a couple of longer rides, including one to Niagara Falls, Burlington. Yeah. So I had always ridden, but never for like long distance. And so last summer I was able to do that, and it was a lot of fun.
Mm. Any triathlon in your racing schedule? Or
I think like a lot of people, I'm a poor swimmer, you know, it's like I have the running and I have the cycling, it feels okay, but the swimming is, yeah, I would need to do a lot of training for that.
that was my intro to the sport as well. It's, I did get influenced and, encouraged to try triathlon and, but like the swimming was my weakness as well. So
yeah,
it's a lot of work, but, it's rewarding once it kind of clicks. But I think the people that are really good at it kind of grew up as swimmers and it's just second nature to them.
Yeah. I believe it. I mean, it's not off the table. I think some point maybe. And I also grew up swimming. Like I took a lot of swimming lessons when I was a kid. I don't know. I never really stuck with it as an adult. But I love water. So again, maybe in my future.
Maybe in your future. So where are you from originally?
So I'm from Edmonton.
Okay.
Yeah, I moved here. Gosh, like 14 years ago, 14, 15 years ago. Yeah.
And how, what sparked that kind of, what that move? Was it school or family or?
You know, at the time I wanted to leave Edmonton. And by the time I decided to move to Toronto, I had left Edmonton and then returned back to Edmonton. And I just felt like if I was going to work in media, I didn't want to, I was going to have to move to like a bigger city. And, you know, Vancouver didn't appeal to me in that same way. So I headed east.
Okay. And you're loving Toronto, the Toronto life? I have a lot of family there. So I'm always, you're always curious to get people's perspective.
Yes. I love the city and I've been here for so long. So it is home. But it's not without the things that I'm just like complaining about. Like, I do think that as somebody who's like lived in different places, I can, you know, kind of see some of the areas in which Toronto falls short, as well as recognize the areas in which the city excels and like is wonderful. So, yeah.
Well, I do like to visit from time to time when I can. Now the borders are closed, so we cannot.
Yeah.
So my family's, you know, my grandma and aunts and uncles, they're all kind of,
yeah,
we've been separated, but hopefully that changes sometime soon.
Yeah, I hope everyone's doing well. Like I just, you know, this is a tough time for everybody for a number of reasons. Yeah.
So I always like to go back to the beginning of, you know, how were you growing up as a kid? Were you athletic? You know, you're a runner, cyclist now, but was it always the case?
Yeah. You know, I never really did like, well, no, I shouldn't say that. Okay. So I grew up in like a pretty athletic family. Like my dad plays, or I guess played tennis and badminton. And, you know, my mom is a big walker and outdoor person. So we were always just encouraged to be outside and to, play sports. I have an older brother as well as a cousin that lived with us who was like an older brother. So, you know, it was sort of like me trying to keep up with them, and they played ice hockey and hockey, floor hockey, and so when I was little, I would like, you know, try to keep up with them and ride my bike. And in junior high, I ended up doing a little bit of track and I really enjoyed sprinting. You know, I didn't come to distance running until I was an adult, but I really enjoyed like moving fast and yeah, just like the fun of competing and track. And then in high school, I ended up playing soccer, which was a lot of fun. Because I went to an academic high school, we didn't actually have a gym. And so in order for me to get like physical activity, I joined the soccer wow. team. And I mean, we were terrible. We were like a really terrible team. But I really loved being outside in the spring and summer and just spending, like, you know, after school, these long days or long evenings of playing games and stuff like that, and just like being outside. So
soccer. So you didn't have any background in soccer. You just kind of got into it through school. And
yeah. I went to an academic school, and it was sort of like, not everybody was into sports. And so it was like pretty easy to get on the team, you know, cause they needed people to play. And it just so happened that I ended up really enjoying it. I was like decent at it. But yeah.
And the intro to the running, how did that come about? Was it just, you wanted to try it, or was it a friend, or?
Yeah, no. So, I mean, running had been sporadically in my life throughout various channels, but in terms of like taking it up seriously, probably, gosh, I want to say like 2012, 2013, I started running regularly. And at the time I was going through a lot of stuff. So it was mostly just for like exercising and processing what was happening in my life, and, you know, just like any bit of movement. And I had recalled that I always loved running on running track and, you know, like being outside, but for whatever reason, I just didn't continue it when I went to university. So
I see.
And even into my like early 20s, but yeah, around 2012 is when I started to run regularly. And I was a solo runner too.
Okay.
Yeah. I ended up just kind of like, okay, you know, start off and run around the block, see how that feels, start off and maybe run around the block twice. Yeah. Eventually, a friend of mine was like, hey, you want to come to this night, this, on Tuesdays, like it's in Parkdale with this group of runners. And I was like, sure. And then that's how it happened. I ended up like finding people and community at Parkdale.
That's incredible. So what was the initial reaction you had when you went to join a group? Was there any like reservations or fear
involved
in that?
Oh, process? Yeah, for sure. I think that like to go from not running with people to running with people, and stepping into a social situation where you don't know folks is intimidating, of course. And I definitely remember being kind of nervous showing up and just being like, I don't know what to expect. Like I've never run in a group except for like during school gym class. And what's this like? Like, so it was a bit of anxiety on the, oh, I'm going to be running with people, as well as like, oh, there's a whole bunch of new people to meet. What's that going to look like?
And a bit overwhelming, I'm sure too.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first night I went to, I think they were, based out of the Gladstone, hotel. So this was like a few years after Parkdale had been created. And they had grown to the point where they needed like a slightly larger place, that wasn't the mascot. And I think at that point the mascot didn't exist anymore. So it was like, they had a new, clubhouse, and it was the Gladstone.
Okay, so they had this, can you paint that picture first? So they had always had a meeting spot, and then everyone would go there, and then you'd take off for a run, and it was a social thing, or was there a workout component, or?
Yeah, it's a social thing. So yeah, I mean, in the before times, it was like, okay, come, there's bag drop, you can, yeah, meet up, use the washroom, have a sip of water, and then there'd be announcements. And, you know, just to talk about like upcoming events or anything that was worth celebrating. Somebody ran a race over the weekend, somebody, you know, like, yeah. So then there'd be announcements, and then it would take off. In previous days, we used to have two distances, and, you know, different pace groups, so that nobody would be left behind. And then afterwards it'd just be, you know, people could hang out, socialize if they want. The whole point is to run together and to socialize. Like, nobody's left behind. We want people to run together.
Mm. So would there be multiple pacers for this, or like a big group, and then people would, you know, the leaders would stagger amongst them? Like, I guess it depends how many.
Yeah,
captains you have, if you will.
It wasn't so much like pace group, but it would be like, okay, so we have like one or two people that are going to be running the front of the longer distance and some people that are at the back. So just make sure you're in between those two. And it would be for both the long distance and the shorter distance. The longer distance used to be like 7 or 8 kilometers, and then the shorter one would probably be about 5.
Okay.
And so, I mean, we did ask that people would be able to run a 5 and, you know, kind of like within the parameters of this pace.
Okay. So just to be able to have a certain level of fitness. So, you know, so they could complete the run, let's say. And
yeah.
Cause I find that's hard. That's a hard thing, especially when you're trying to be inclusive for everybody. You want to encourage people to come out, and
yeah,
people are always asking about paces, you know? So I was just curious about that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that that's something, you know, worth reconsidering for the future. And I mean, not just even for us, for like any kind of crew or group run, right? Like how you want to define the parameters of what, like, should this only be for people that can run a 5K? Should we shorten that distance? And we, for a while, we had a, you know, like once a month or something, we'd have something that was more geared towards beginners. So we would do like a much shorter, maybe 1 or 2K run walk situation. Mm-hmm. But again, things have just been, everything has changed. So
yeah, nowadays, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so, did you guys plan races and stuff that you do as a collective, or was it very much, you know, you'd meet up once a week and then
you'd
do your own thing?
So, I mean, we used to do stuff like the Labor Day half, right? So we would plan a half marathon route that people could run, and then a bunch of events kind of around that weekend. So, you know, one year we went to the island. Another year we just hung out on a beach afterwards. And so, yeah, we've definitely had a few races and events that we've planned ourselves, even like Take the Bridge, participating in that. You know, like we had a Parkdale Scramble one year that coincided with Nuit Blanche, right? Like it was sort of a scavenger hunt of sorts, where you'd go and look at take pictures of pieces of art and run back to the Gladstone. And you could do that in a relay or in a pair situation. So, yeah, creating just kind of fun things.
Yeah, it makes it fun, right?
Yeah.
And do you find, you know, with a club that's been around that long, do you get people coming from, you know, out of town, from other crews, you know, in different parts of, you know, maybe North America or Canada or other parts coming to join you guys? And
yeah,
because you're pretty well known. And now, I guess after 10 years of being there, you know, you've got to connect with a lot of different run communities.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think that we have participated in Bridge the Gap with a lot of the international crews. So like Rendum in London, Bridge Runners in New York. You know, like we have hosted people here for events like the Scotiabank Marathon. You know, I forget what year it was. It was like a few years ago where we had a bunch of people come in to run that marathon. And, you know, we planned like all of these events around it, including a BTG dinner and after party, huge cheer squad at events. It's been really great to be able to travel and meet people from different runners from different cities and countries and just, you know, talk about running and also see what the situation is like in their cities.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that stands out to you that you've learned from other, you know, clubs or people from other parts of the world and kind of how they do things?
I think that I just overall find it really interesting to talk to people about what's going on locally, you know, and when you're there, it's great because you get a glimpse into what the running scene is like. And same thing, like when people come to Toronto, it's like, oh, let me just show you, let me show you some of my roots. Like, let's show you what some of the things that the city has to offer in terms of running, yes, but also like food and people. And I just feel like really lucky to be able to have had those experiences and meet people from different countries. And we have this common thread of running, but there's just like so much more in there.
Mm. Would you say that a lot of your people or your friends are part of the run community, or do you have like a divide in your world? Like, I know I have a divide.
Yeah.
Like I have my run friends and then I got my non-run friends, and it's hard to explain to the non-run friends. Yeah. What it is.
It's funny you say that, because like I come from like more of an arts community. So I have a bit of a divide, like, you know, my artist friends, but there's also been a bit of a crossover as well. Like, I find that some of the friends that were not runners have started running. And so it's been interesting to chat to people about that and, you know, the very, like, the particularities that runners have and kind of seeing right. that, like, come out in folks. But, yeah, no, I have, like, a pretty, yeah, I'd say I have a divide because, you know, like, not everyone is a runner and also runners have many different backgrounds. Like, it's just I don't know where I'm going with
that. no, it's true. I totally agree with you, and sometimes it's the people you'd least expect that become runners. And you know, there's some incredible stories of, you know, of fitness and, you know, life-changing things. We've spoke to people that, you know, bad eating habits and partying, and then all of a sudden running changes that for some, you know? So
yeah,
I think it's remarkable. Do you have any short stories like that you've come across, or?
I mean, I think just, I do have friends that have taken up running, and it's been great to sort of see the positive impacts that it has on their life. Like, I mean, running is for me is beyond just like this one particular thing that you do for a few hours, right? It sort of like interweaves with other aspects of your life. For example, like getting enough sleep, diet, you mentioned, making sure that you're eating well and not, you know, having food that's going to bog you down before your long run or something.
What's your go-to with food and making sure you fuel properly?
So I guess I eat a lot of pasta and rice nice. You know, like make sure I have protein afterwards for the recovery. Try not to have too many potato chips, but I do love salt.
Yeah.
And yeah, just making sure that I'm eating well and not eating out a lot. Yeah, but I like cooking, so it's fine.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Well, that's you got to make the time for it and prep and stuff like that. But
yeah,
something I continue to try to improve on and expand on, but it's not always the easiest. But
also a lot of water and hydration.
Yeah. So I have, just to go back to Parkdale a little bit, but so when did you become, you know, you went from more of a, you know, participant, active participant, into more of a, you know, a leader role. So what did that process look like? And, you know, how did you find your way through, like, how did you navigate through that?
Yeah. So, you know, I was always like active and participating and, at events and like showed up consistently. And, I guess, yeah, like a year and a half, 2 years ago, Mike asked me if I wanted to come on board in a more leadership role. And I thought, sure, why not? Like, this is an opportunity to, step out of my own comfort zone and kind of be in a little bit more of a public role. And also hopefully affect some change. Like, I do think that there are many different runners that are a part of the community, but who gets leadership roles and who gets like visibility isn't always equally distributed. So I thought this would be like a really great opportunity to kind of like step into a leadership role and also try and create more opportunities for equity and diversity. And yeah.
That's great. I think it's, you know, that's super important and something we try and encourage. But so how did you, was it something particular that you were like working on or focused on, and how did you go about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of the conversation in the last couple of years has been around how white the sport is. And that was certainly what I was sort of seeing in media and coverage. And so, like I was saying, the community is made of such diverse runners that there are people of all levels, of all backgrounds, of all abilities, of, you know, gender identification. And I just wanted to see more of that, and more, yeah, like kind of give voice to people that don't usually have the mic given to them. And so, yeah, like I've been trying to figure out how we can do that in the context of running as well as beyond. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, and so what are some of the like steps you're taking, or maybe this isn't something you know, like specifically, it's maybe just a way of, you know, thoughtfully going about things and making sure you give that space to people. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think that like, you know, it's kind of tough. So sorry, I'm going to rewind. Like, it was a bit tough stepping into this role too, because, you know, I was asked to join and I was doing a lot of kind of behind the scenes organizing stuff, you know, like helping out with some of the social media and writing. And then the pandemic hit. And so we were scrambling in terms of just like trying to figure out how to pivot for the community and for ourselves. And this also, you know, kind of like threw a wrench into things for, in terms of like organizing events and stuff like that. And so I had these ideas and plans of things that I had wanted to do, but we needed to pivot that because it just wasn't possible to do in-person stuff anymore. Right. So, I mean, I can talk a bit about like Chinatown Runners and what I've been doing with that.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah. So, you know, like with the pandemic and as well as even before then, there has been a lot of anti-Asian racism and just witnessing what was happening to people in the country as well as in the US and globally. And then, you know, I saw this, I saw Victoria Lowe from New York had posted something about creating Chinatown Runners, which is an initiative that isn't community or city or crew specific. Like, she created this with the intention that people from around the country and the world, wherever there was like an Asian diaspora, would be able to kind of take it on themselves and mold it to what it would look like in their city and for their community there. So I reached out to her and was just like asking about potentially starting something here in Toronto, because we do have a large Asian population. And I was certainly feeling pretty unsettled by what was happening, all the violence towards Asian seniors, and just feeling really kind of unsettled and wondering what more I can do. And being a part of the running community, I was like, well, this is something that, you know, we could easily do here that would be beneficial for folks. Also a way to support Chinatown, because the businesses in Chinatown have been impacted, like most small businesses, but I think a lot of immigrant-run businesses for sure have been impacted, and people that don't necessarily have an online presence. And so I was like, okay, I would like to maybe see if we can organize something here in Toronto. And yeah, so I just ended up reaching out to her. She gave me some information about what they were doing, but was pretty like hands-off. It's been kind of cool because we've been able to create this international network of people that are doing similar things in their own cities. You know, creating these monthly runs as ways to raise awareness. For me, I see it as a way to raise awareness, support the businesses and or local charities here, as well as to look at like some of the history of the city. And so, yeah, every time I do a run, I do a lot of research and just kind of like pull up some interesting facts about the route or the neighborhood or, you know, just, yeah, Chinatown, maybe the contribution of an Asian person. Like, yeah, I just think it's a great opportunity to not just run, but also engage with the city as well as history.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. And do you feel like maybe it's made you appreciate it a little bit more as well?
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. You know, it's been really fun to learn things that, to learn facts that aren't, you know, written in history books, that aren't taught to you. So, yeah, for sure. It's made me engage with the city in a different way, too.
Yeah, and I love that they created this, but not for a city, but for anybody who wanted to get involved. You could, you know, you could reach out and be part of that movement. And the graphic that they've released is pretty, it's very noticeable. You can recognize it just about anywhere, right?
So yeah, I do. I mean, it's kind of like, how can you create just one centralized narrative, especially when patterns of migration are so varied, the way people settle in different countries and how, especially for immigrants, like how you're treated varies so widely from place to place, that inevitably plays a part in like how your community survives, how your community forms, you know, how they engage with your new home, like all of these things.
Mm-hmm. I love too how running and awareness work hand in hand. Like, I don't know how they, you know, I don't know. This is a weird thing I'm thinking about right now, but it works for some reason. And I don't really know why. Maybe it's because the community's there and, you know, when a group of people go out for a run, you notice it and, you know,
yeah.
I don't know.
I kind of get what you're saying, and I've had many conversations about this because you can't separate your identity from the sport, right? Like, this is something that you do, but if you are a marginalized person, you're not going to be able to hide that, like to separate the fact that you are a Black runner or an Asian woman runner, you know? Like, it's like you're running and you're out there and you're visible because this is who you are. Just like how running is a part of your life. Like, so I just think like in the last few years, people have been speaking up a lot more about their experiences, and that's a good thing, as opposed to just, you know, being quiet about facing racism or facing misogyny or facing, other oppressions.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a good thing to hear the stories and to have more of an understanding, right? Because if you don't hear those things and you're in your bubble, like you're not gonna learn much, right?
It goes back to representation, and representation is kind of like the first step, because if you don't see yourself reflected in the sport or in media, then, you know, a lot of this stuff gets internalized about shame around who you are, or, you know, thinking that there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. When really there's nothing. Do you think it's helpful when people, I don't know if I want to say celebrities, but people in pro sports speak out more about their experiences, and it kind of paves the way for the others to open up about that too?
Yeah, for sure. If a celebrity has a platform, what a great way to use that platform to talk about important things or the things that they see as unjust. And I would love to see more ordinary people talking about their experiences. I think that it's important when celebrities speak out, but I also don't want to just like turn to celebrities as spokespeople for everybody.
Yeah. But I mean, if it's somebody you're running with, you know, on a weekly basis, it's way more relatable. It's way more impactful, I find, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. And there's so much that when you have a running partner, whatever, there's so much that gets revealed, right? Like you learn so much more about this person than you might know about a coworker.
That's totally true. And like a lot of people that you run with too, you don't even know what they do for a living.
Yeah. I can't even tell you how many moments where it's been like, oh, I didn't, that's what you do. Wow. like years later.
Yeah. Time flies. Eh? So what's been the feedback from your efforts? The response from your own community, the response from the community of runners that you're part of, or non-runners that you're part of?
It's been overwhelmingly supportive and positive. I think that us creating this virtual run too has been such a nice opportunity for us to feel connected as a community, even though people are doing solo runs and running it on their own time. But it's been really positive to be able to have this thing that still kind of ties us together. And then in terms of support from the community, has been positive, and people have been, you know, appreciative of Chinatown Runners existing and being able to go, an excuse to go and support some businesses there. I've been getting some good feedback from folks.
Mm. And so how does that work, the virtual side? How do you support the businesses? Is there a list of different businesses? Is there a day that you run on?
Yeah, so in particular? What we've been doing is choosing a weekend that coincides with what Chinatown Runners in New York has been planning, as well as some of the other crews. And so, we've had two already, and the first one I had planned was from one Chinatown to the next, since downtown Toronto has two Chinatowns, and it just so happened that the distance between the two was approximately 5 kilometers. So, I had encouraged people to donate to a community center in Chinatown that provides a lot of support for the community, and because of COVID had shifted to pandemic support. And then there were a few businesses that I'd highlighted in the route and in the stories, just, you know, encouraging people to support them afterwards, but also like, you know, if you want to support another business in Chinatown, go for it. And there's an aspect of like I was saying, supporting a local charity or organization. So for the second one, because of the violence in Atlanta, I directed efforts to supporting Butterfly, which provides support for Asian and migrant sex workers in Toronto.
Okay.
Because yeah, I think that it's awesome. Like, we have this community of people that want to give back and want to do good things. And so I think it's great to be able to leverage this network and just be like, hey, if you are able to, and it's within your means, please support this organization that's doing a lot of on the ground work.
Yeah, that's great. I think and the runs, you know, that's one thing, you know, that maybe that's how it connects, that runners are so supportive of one another and their goals.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you include them in something like this, it allows them to show up in a different way, you know?
Yeah.
And I think too, like, I know for myself, I'm always thinking of ways that I want to give back, but sometimes you don't know how. So you're also putting it in front of them in a way that they can be supportive. And it's easy for them to it's accessible for them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's
totally,
that's pretty
just
cool.
Trying to like create as few barriers to giving back as possible. Right. Like, yeah. I do a lot of research, and I do a lot of, writing of communications and information to ensure that it's clear and that it's just like easy for people to help. And I was going to say about the second one that we had organized earlier this month, it was in conjunction with our mural run. It's before we had done, there's two people in the crew, Carolina and Lisa, who had been organizing mural runs. And they would run around the city and just like go look at different pieces of wall art and graffiti. And we were lucky enough to be able to kind of combine that and, you know, look at some of the artwork in Chinatown and some of the mythology around the pieces. You know, like a lot of them are based on stories and folktales. And kind of just like, yeah, create a fun route that way where you're not just running from one place to the next. You're like a little bit more engaged and active with the artwork and what you're seeing, as well as like asking people to reflect on some of the history, right? Like, it was all very intentional to create this, this last event this way.
Yeah. That's really powerful too. You know, a lot of times we just run by things, or maybe we notice it, but we don't stop to ask why it's there.
Yeah.
Or why it was created, or the purpose of it, or,
yeah,
all that. I was gonna say, for you as part of your art background, like, that must be heaven.
Yeah, like, it's,
you've been traveling and running and seeing all these monuments and, you know, artwork, and I don't know if you're into museums and stuff too, but
I have to say, like, it's, I mean, I think anytime you're like on foot, you know, the way that you travel and the way that you engage with the city is so different when you're seeing it on foot, like whether you're running or walking, versus if you're in a train or in a car or even on a bicycle, you just kind of like engage with the place differently. So, you know, I feel very fortunate to have been able to travel the places and just kind of like run races there and just sort of like see what it feels like on a very different level. One thing I was going to add about that, our last run too, was that we had asked Jenny Seo, who was from Parkdale, too, to talk a bit about, because she's Korean, and we ran from Chinatown to Koreatown, to talk a little bit about Koreatown history in her stories, as a sort of additional supplementary, like, this is an interesting fact. Think about this when you're running. So.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, hopefully I can get to Toronto and join you guys on one of these on one of these runs. You know, that would be
amazing. Yeah,
yeah, it's not too far. I can't believe I haven't ran with Parkdale yet. It's I'm like always in. Well, always I go visit quite often because, like I said, I have family there. But
yeah,
Yeah. It sounds like it'd be a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm hoping that this will end quickly.
Quickly. A year, going into 2 years now. So,
although I look at it as like, in terms of like the history of pandemics, it is relatively fast considering like, you know, the other great flu took like 4 years to get a vaccine. And so
that's true. That's very true.
Yeah.
How do you feel like you've grown in that leadership role and taking on these, you know, these, I know you were doing it before as well, but, it's a bit different when you're handed the role and maybe, you know, I don't know if you say it's added pressure or anything like that, but how do you feel like you've grown?
I think that I've gotten a lot more comfortable with speaking out and my voice. You know, I think that when you're thrust into a leadership role, you kind of have to step up. You have to step up and into it. And then, like, you know, initially I had to remind myself a lot that I was asked to be in this role for a reason. There are these things that I bring to the table that are beneficial for everybody. So to really feel grounded and powerful in that, you know, and to trust my instincts and to trust, like, yeah, my talents and my skills and what I bring to the table.
And I'm sure working with those other co-captains too is, I'm sure you can learn a lot from those guys as well. Like I got to meet Mike a few times here in Montreal and a few group runs. And
yeah,
he's a great guy and a good leader too.
So. For sure. It's interesting working with them because it's kind of like everybody has their, everybody has a different skill set and what they bring to the table. So it's like very complementary. And I find that it works well. So it's been great, like working with them and learning from them and also like, you know, bringing my ideas to the table too.
Of course. I mean, that's why you're there, right? You got to bring a new energy, a new vibe to it. And, I'm sure it's appreciated.
Yeah, so, and it's been super supportive. Like, I've found it really easy to just be like, hey, I have this idea. I want to do this. And they're like, great. How do we support?
Which is the best kind of team.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Is there anything that stands out that you've learned from them? You know, like, I know I botched the intro there a little bit. But, you know, they've been around for, you know, 10 years. So there's a lot of lessons there, I'm sure. And I'm sure you've picked up on a few.
Oh yeah. I think that a lot of, you know, like what I've learned is just sort of how great having a global community and network is. And I talked about that, like being able to go somewhere and just like automatically being able to connect with people who are from there, because of this sport and sort of, you know, feeding off of each other, like, okay, what are you doing over here? Oh, I see. So that works for you. I wonder if I can tweak or adapt it so that it works for us here in Toronto or here in Canada. You know, just kind of like seeing what other crews and groups are doing has been really inspirational and like just, yeah, really interesting to learn from.
Yeah, I think everybody's got something to offer, different ideas, different, you know, different, every community is different too,
mm-hmm.
in its own way too, right? And unique. So, you know, the clubs here in Montreal are different from the ones in Toronto and I'm sure they're different in Vancouver too, you know? So
yeah, for sure. And again, like it's also just super interesting to kind of learn what's happening locally, even beyond running. It's sort of like, again, when you're running, you talk about many different things. And so it's been, for me, like when I'm traveling, it's been like a really great way to just find out what's happening in news locally. You know, like, mm-hmm. what's this issue that you guys are all concerned about? Oh, okay. So like we have something similar here, but da-da-da-da, you know, like kind of being able to, yeah, see how it is everywhere else.
That's great. I want to go back to you a bit more, you know, personally and, you know, just kind of when you joined Parkdale and, you know, you were a sprinter and you like sprinting, and then like, how did you shift to the like long distance stuff, and maybe what were some challenges you faced as a runner?
Yeah.
You know, increasing volume and stuff like that.
Yeah. I will say that I think that like, I mean, sprinting was awesome and being able to do track was really great, but I think that at a certain level, if you're not, you know, like a pro or you're not very good at it, like it kind of falls off a bit. So distance running is a little bit more accessible in that way. Like, you know, you can sign up for a 5K, you can sign up for a 10, you can sign up for half or a full. And it's not like you need a time qualifier for those things. Whereas I feel like with track, it was a little bit more of a restrictive sport. So, yeah, with distance running, I think it's just like, oh, this is easy enough for me to do. And I can just like lace up and go outside for a bit. And, you know, the more that I was kind of running with people, the more an idea of doing a race came into my mind as an adult. And so I think I started off like either running a 5 or a 10K, like maybe one of those mech races.
Right.
That was just like super like an accessible low fee to join and just like on a weekend or whatever. And running races is kind of addictive at times. Cause you just, it's like you put all of this time into training and then you go and you do it and it's a party. It's fun. And I, knock on wood, luckily haven't been severely injured. And so I've been able to kind of maintain like at least doing a couple of races a year. Yeah. And then I forgot the other part of your question.
No, it was really that. So I'll ask you, what was the feeling you got when you started racing? Like maybe the experience from your first race ever?
Yeah, I think it was like a bit of shock and pleasant surprise being like, hey, I did that. You know, and it's sort of like I spent all this time training and I did it. It was fun. And these people are here all doing the same thing. Like they're all working towards their goal, whatever their goals may be. And, you know, in the before times, being able to gather outside with people is really powerful and really fun.
Mm. And what were your goals? Like, what were your goals for your race? Or was it just to complete, or was it for time, or was it like, I don't know what that looked like. And you said you were competitive, a little bit competitive growing up. So
yeah.
What was the focus?
You know, initially it was like, okay, I'm going to finish. And then, as I started to learn more and more about running efficiently and racing, they became more time oriented. And the last couple of years I was like, actually, you know, maybe I do want to run a world major or two. So currently like working on that. I mean, whenever we're allowed to do those again, I'd love to be able to run like Tokyo or London. I've run a few majors and we'll see like how far I get with those.
Which ones have you ran?
Chicago and Berlin. Those two are the flat and fast ones. yeah, like I was saying, it's just like such a great way to enjoy a city when mm-hmm. you're there and you're just like running and you're meeting. And the nice thing too during a major is that you're meeting people from all over the world that are there to do the exact same thing. It's great mm-hmm. meeting locals, but also like so cool to meet somebody who's there doing the same thing and then, you know, being able to talk to them about their whole process and running journeys is really great.
Yeah. I've not the flat fast ones. I've done.
Oh yeah.
I've done two as well, but I did. I've done Boston and New York.
Yeah. So the two toughest ones.
Yeah. So Berlin was on the schedule last September, yeah. And for obvious reasons, didn't happen. And I'm going to bank on 2022, let's call it, for the next one. Yeah, definitely on the list of to-dos. And so when you made the jump to the marathon, was it, how quick did you do that? I'm curious.
So I feel like I had a pretty gradual, like, you know, I started off running a 5 and then I ran a 10 and then I was like, I'm going to attempt a half. you know, and I did go through like a training season, but it wasn't, I didn't know what I was doing. Like I ran long runs on the weekend, but there was no like focus on recovery runs. There was no focus on an actual training plan. And so I ended up doing it. But it was not easy. And yeah, again, like a bit of a competitive nature with myself, just being like, okay, so I did that, but how do I do better? How do I shave some of that time off? Or how do I run it so that I don't feel like I'm dead at the end?
Which is the ultimate goal.
Which is, yeah, still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I know. It's hard in the marathon.
The marathon is a grueling sport because, again, it's not just like that day, right? Like it's not just like even the week leading up to it. It's like literally a whole training cycle, a few months of your life where you're like, okay, this is the thing that I'm going to do. So what do I need to do to get there? But it's, I do kind of also love figuring that out. Like I do love problem solving, and I love like efficiency. So thinking of ways to like be more efficient in my training, my running, my like eating schedule, like all that stuff is interesting to me.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Just maybe some things you've discovered or things that work for
you? Yeah. I mean, okay. So I ended up getting a coach like last year. And you know, she's a triathlete. And so she, built in a lot of strength and a lot of cross training, as well as a lot of talking about diet and sleep, right? Like I think sleep is so important and so underrated in life in general, but especially if you're an athlete, like I think that you need to really make sure that you're resting and getting as much sleep as you can. Because it's such a tough sport that your body needs the downtime. Like your body literally needs to repair itself. So, yeah, to me, like, I think sleep is a secret weapon. And so is strength training and cross training.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, that's where the cycling comes in, I'm sure. And I'm starting to, due to a stubborn Achilles tendon, I'm starting to do more strength right now. And,
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. Like I, you know, my coach had given me a home workout program that just like completely changed the game for me and just elevated it for my running. It just made me realize like, oh, right. Like if you do this one little muscle strengthening thing, it can really impact your racing.
Right. Did you feel it like right away? Like it, 'cause I don't know if a lot of people understand it or believe it. It's, you know, and I am one of those people. I know it's good for me and I know I need to do it, but it's, you tend to only do it in recovery.
Yeah. Or I think
when you're about to get injured or something, but I think if you can incorporate it early enough, or if you have a coach that's telling you, you know, put it in and you know, it's going to make a difference. It's kind of like do it to believe it kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. I think that it's, unfortunately, it's one of those things where you're doing it and you don't see the gains immediately. You know, it's kind of like I was doing all this extra strength training and didn't realize how much it was going to help, because also at the time, it's not like you're lifting all of these weights and you're not like, you know, it's like a completely different kind of conditioning as opposed to like a very big workout. And so I didn't even notice it until gradually, but I think that's like running too. Sometimes like you put in this work and it builds on itself, but it's not like you're going to make a huge difference immediately.
Yeah, it's such a process-driven sport.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, it's hard to see those gains in the short term. It's almost never that way. So
yeah,
kind of relates to what you're talking about.
Yeah, it really is just like fits in well with the whole metaphor, the marathon metaphor, right? Because it's like you got to pace yourself, and you might not see like a huge difference, but over time, you complete it or you do this thing, and it's like, yeah, a lifestyle.
What did it feel like to complete your first marathon?
It was jubilant and pain. I just remember being like, I can't believe I've been running for this long. And like, I trained for it, but like, damn, this is, I can't believe people do this, but then also like, oh yeah, this is great. I did it. So yeah.
Have you, is that where you stop at 42.2, or like me, I'm focused on, you know, up to the marathon. Do you have any kind of interest in running ultras or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm not going to say no. Like, I do think generally that if an opportunity presents itself, I would love to try it. I will try it. I actually really love the half distance because it's just long enough, but you're also not running forever. And, you know, it's kind of like I find that's a good balance between distance and speed, right? I think for sure, like my first marathon, when I passed the halfway point, because Parkdale also used to set up a cheer squad at the halfway point, I thought to myself like, oh God, now I have to do that again. Like could I just have ended? And especially for Toronto, like that route, because with the half, you usually just like peel up and go back to the start. Whereas, the second half of the Scotiabank marathon, you're just like, okay, now I run to that part where there's nobody and you're on the highway and you have to double back.
You're talking about the waterfront?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I've ran that a few times as well.
Yeah. It's, the second half is tough.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, having that cheer squad kind of under the bridge is not helping. Okay, Parkdale.
And it also just sounds extra loud because you're under the bridge and everything is echoing. So,
it's amplified.
It's amplified, but then you're just kind of like, okay, now I just have to do that again, that distance again.
Yeah. Oh man. My best race was the Toronto waterfront. My best marathon was there. And I actually, one of my shoes came undone at the halfway mark, like right under the bridge. So I had to like drop down and tie my shoe fast and then sprint up ahead to kind of catch my spot. But
yeah,
ended up being my best race. And yeah, I fell short of a goal by like 2 seconds. Oh. So I always wonder.
That just means you have to come back and have a showdown again.
Yeah, exactly. But I do enjoy the track. It's pretty flat, you know, for
Toronto is
all intents and purposes. Yeah.
Toronto is a, you know, it is a fairly flat city. And people are surprised when I tell them that Edmonton actually has hills, you
know. Yeah,
it's not flat like Toronto. Like there are actually some rollers there. So, mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's awesome. So, what's next for you in terms of like your own personal goals and?
So, I was actually supposed to run Boston last year. Because of COVID times, everything's been delayed. Mm-hmm. You know, for me personally right now, it's just like getting back into a regular practice and building up a good base, because someday I would like to be able to run Boston and Tokyo and, you know, get back to traveling and running.
Right. Was that always a dream for you, Boston? I know, it's a focus of a lot of runners. It's the holy grail kind of thing.
It wasn't always, because I think that I had, when I started running, it was kind of like, I never imagined running a marathon, right? Like, I wasn't front of mind. And also Boston, I think just as a race itself is pretty inaccessible. And, you know, going back to the issue of diversity, you don't see a lot of diversity in terms of who's towing the line. You're starting to, but it wasn't like top of mind for me until I started like doing a bit more running. And then it was kind of because of my community and people running Boston, I was kind of like, it became something that was in my realm of possibility, but I didn't start off thinking that way.
And I think for me too, it was the same thing. Mm-hmm. It was just, I was in triathlon and decided I want to like to, because there's a marathon in like a long distance triathlon. Mm. So in the Ironman. So I was like, oh, let me go and run Toronto Waterfront, cause I don't want my first one to be in a triathlon.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for
and,
sure.
I think to your point, like, I don't know if I've ever been fitter than when I was doing triathlon because of the cross training. Mm. So I can relate to what you're saying with the weight training and cycling and all that stuff. And, but yeah, it wasn't really a thing for me. It was kind of a surprise almost. And, but then when you get there, I mean, you have to go run it. It's pretty cool weekend overall. And the course is epic, and it's tough, but I mean, so is a marathon, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I will say this about like a lot of the world majors is that it isn't, it's just not accessible in terms of, you know, the financials of it too, right? Like you have the actual entrance fee itself is a sum of money, as well as the travel, as well as the accommodation. And so, you know, when I first started out, it was definitely not a priority for me to be traveling and running. It just so happened at the time I had a job that allowed me to do this. And, you know, then getting into some of these races, it's like, oh, I have this goal that I want to work towards. I will make it happen, whether it's time-wise or financials. So.
Absolutely.
I think it'd be fun to go back to track, actually.
Yeah. No, for sure. So what distance would you want to focus on if you did that?
Oh, I mean, maybe the 400.
Okay.
I'd like a closed loop. Yeah.
You could take on Carla Del Grande in the 400.
Yeah. We'll see.
She is fierce. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Man. I need some more lessons from her.
Definitely. I told her it'd be a close race between us. I think my best time is 68. So, she's absolutely something else. So,
I will also say though, I have really been loving the distance riding, and I do think like cycling is actually my first love, because it's something that I've just been doing for a lot longer, and not in any kind of racing capacity, but in terms of like I was saying, commuting and exercise, and just like that feeling of freedom and propulsion from your own body taking you places. So that's, you know, like as a non-running goal, I would love to do more like bike packing trips or in just distance.
Yeah, and it's a low impact too, so it's a nice compliment to that.
Yeah,
that's great. What's the best advice you can give somebody who either, you know, wants to make a change in their life or wants to start running, maybe wants to start running in a group, or like what's some of the best advice?
Yeah. I would say like start gradually in terms of the running. Like if you are going from not moving to wanting to move, like you have to give yourself time. And again, that goes back to that marathon analogy, is that like you can't expect to be able to run a marathon like the next day, you know? And so if it's starting like just around the block or like a run walk, that's really important, because I think a lot of times people end up like having this motivation and doing, going out for a run and then coming back and feeling really awful either the same day or the day after, because you've overexerted yourself without, you know, learning to stretch or just like knowing your limits. Whereas if you start out gradually and you go out, you're like, okay, I'm going to run around this block once, and knowing when to say like, okay, that's enough for today. I'm going to go back and recover and then maybe do this again tomorrow or the day after that, I think is like really, really important. Just to, yeah, in terms of for new runners, like not to overexert yourself initially. It's good to push yourself, but like, I think that that soreness and that pain is often what like deters people. And it's like, you have to know that that pain comes with it, but also like know to ramp up gradually.
Mm-hmm. There's a good pain and a bad
pain. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think I think a lot of the challenges around beginning to run or learning how to set attainable goals, you know, part of the trap is like social media, I think, a bit, and what we're surrounded with in terms of, you know, I'd like that with a lot of things in life. You see the good stuff and the good sides of training and the glory of racing. And
yeah,
but I think that's a trap a lot of runners might fall into.
Yeah.
And it's how do you check down and do the things that you just mentioned, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think that if we had a lot more glimpses of the journey itself, both, you know, it's great to have these things to celebrate, but then it's also really important to talk about the setbacks and talk about injuries and talk about like lessons learned, right? Like that's what makes the entire journey interesting. You can't just have this like shoot to running a marathon and qualifying for Boston right off the bat. Like you have to have these things, these lessons that you're learning along the way that improve your time or improve your performance. Because a lot of it is around resiliency, right? Like learning what kinds of things are holding you back, both systemically and structurally, but then also what are the things that can be done to overcome them? What kinds of support do you need? What are some ways to push against those barriers?
Yeah, you know? That's the key. There's a lot of learning there, and this, you know, even though we have a lot of tools and resources. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it doesn't always, you know, you got to learn the hard way a lot of the times, you know, but.
Well, and also it's like, nobody's going to run it for you. Like as much as you can read up on it or learn about things, it's like, you still have to actually try it. And I think that is another thing that I would really emphasize, is this, the courage to just try something. You know, try and go for that run around the block, or try and switch up your run tactics or your strategies, right? Like you won't really know if it'll work for you unless you actually try it. So.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well said.
I also just want to add too, like for new runners that might feel intimidated about running with people, you know, there's nothing wrong with running on your own, but if you do feel like you want that extra push and you want to run with folks, it goes back to also just like trying. Like when I started running with Parkdale, I wasn't sure what to expect. I mentioned I was feeling kind of anxious about meeting some new people, but it ended up being like such a great experience. And I was able to connect with a lot of cool runners that have taught me a lot in terms of running as well as in terms of life stuff. And if you're feeling like a desire to run with people, like honor that and see how it feels and just try it.
Yeah, that's the key, you know, just show up, really. Yeah. It's I was running solo for 5 years before I joined or, you know, run group. Mm-hmm. And it was one friend that encouraged me to go, and then it changed my life, I'd say, you know,
yeah.
Or my trajectory and, you know, what the possibilities were, you know, I did, you know, doing things that I never imagined that I would be capable of doing. Is there anything that you look back on that you can't believe you did that you've done?
Yeah, I think it just goes back to running like the full marathon and looking back and just kind of seeing like, oh, I did not expect my life to tip in this direction. Like I never thought that running would have been such a big part of my life, when I was younger, and here we are talking about it today.
On a podcast.
Yeah. And I don't know. I just think that like, there's so many great things about running, that if it's something that you want to try, that just try it, and it will change your life in different ways, both big and small. So
one of the questions I like to ask everybody is, what has running taught you?
I think that it's taught me courage and resilience. You know, going back to that thought of like just trying something, running has definitely played like a huge part of that. Like just try and run 5K, 10K, half marathon. Just try and line up for this race and see how it goes. You know, like just it's taught me to take some chances, but also to like be confident in my own abilities and skills. Like I always joke that race day is the cherry on top of the cake. Like you've spent all this time building this cake and now you're here to enjoy, and you have to trust in your training and your ability. Like you've put all this time into it. Now's the party. Like you've worked up to this point and it's like you can enjoy this. And so like trusting in the work that I've put into it, and that like my performance is going to reflect all of the time and hard work that I've dedicated to it. And so I think like, yeah, having some confidence in that and trust in it, as well as the resilience and the like, you know, having gone through like training cycles, you're like, okay, I can handle whatever this other thing is. Like I've run a marathon before. I know that I can do this, or I know that I can withstand some painful experiences and painful moments.
I feel too, like you got to trust your instincts.
Mm.
I think this is something that I've tapped into in the last little while. And it's, you know, like you said, it's trusting yourself, but also, you know, following your own instincts and what feels right for you. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
Right? And some of the best races that I've had were ones where I had little to no expectations. Maybe that's because I was naive. Mm-hmm. It was early on, you know, early on, but when we put these external pressures on ourselves, it changes that experience, you know. Mm-hmm. But like you say, if you can just enjoy the cherry on top, that's when you have the best moments. You know, there's nothing that can ruin that.
Yeah,
that moment, that, you know. And I think it's unfortunate, and I hope you do this when you're in Boston, that you treat it, and I think you will, that you will treat it that way, and you enjoy that race for all it is, and because you never get those first ones back, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But when you put all that pressure on yourself to perform, you know, people go to Boston thinking, you know, I want to run the race of my life. It could happen, but it also, it's not forgiving, yeah. You know, the course. So,
yeah.
But you just got to cherish those moments, you know?
I also think that running has taught me a lot about flexibility as well. Like, running in itself is, if you're going through a training program, like it has to be fairly stringent, and you're like, okay, this is the, you know, like I'm running however number of days a week, and this is what I need to hit in terms of like my time and pace and all that stuff. But also, running is a humbling sport. Like, you are also at the mercy of your body. And so, like, keeping in mind flexibility, and sometimes you're not going to have a good workout. Sometimes you're not going to have a good run. Sometimes you're not going to feel like running. And that's okay. You know, like, having that flexibility too of, like, not every day is going to be your day, and not every race is going to be your race. But if you're lucky, and able to keep running and able to keep attending events and stuff like that, like, I would hope that overall, you know, you're having fun with it. And so, just kind of like being flexible about that too, and realizing that, you know, again, it is a journey and you're going to have ups and downs, and that's fine.
And we're not finishing on the podium.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. It's like, I'm not winning this, so it's fine. I can stop and just, like, have a sip of water
or whatever. Yeah. Reset, you know, it's okay. And sometimes it's as simple as that, like, a little reset in a race can, like, completely change it for you.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Des Linden when she won Boston. She waited for, Charlene Flanagan. Mm. Charlene Flanagan, while she went to the porta potty, she kind of hung back a little bit so she could pull her teammate back into the race, you know?
Yeah.
And she won that race. So, you know, you use that as a valuable lesson.
Yeah.
Wait for your friend who has to go for a pee.
It's funny because when you were talking about running Toronto and having to stop and tie your shoelaces, like, I do think that there are these moments that while you're in it, you're just like, oh my God, this is basically going to throw my race, or like, this is, you know, going to be the difference between this and that. And sometimes it's, for me at least, I'm like, if I don't stop at this porta potty, I'm not going to have a good race. So just stop and, you know, reset.
Do you have any, like, speaking of that and with, and the lines of resilience, like, when you're in a race or workout and you want to, you don't feel like you can push through, or do you have anything, any words, any mantras that you use to push forward?
You know, I don't have mantras, but I actually resort to counting. So if I'm like running up a hill and I'm having a hard time, I actually just start counting. And I, you know, like, I speak different languages, so sometimes I'll count in a different language just so that it's a little bit of removing myself from the physicality of it and just kind of focusing a little bit on the mental, and just being like, okay, I'm going to count to 100. And by the time I get to 100, the sensation is going to be different. At that point, I hope that I would have moved from maybe the bottom of the hill to the top, or to, you know, whatever. And just being able to remind myself that what I'm feeling right now isn't necessarily what I'm going to be feeling later. So if it's tough, if it's hard, then, like, I am doing the work to get myself out of it.
Interesting. I like that. I'm going to try it. The counting.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it happens a lot on hills. I'm not going to lie. But yeah, just kind of a reminder that time is also moving and that I am moving. And so, you know, I was saying, like, the pain might be intense right now, but, like, maybe it'll be different at 30, and it'll be different at 40. And, you know, maybe it'll be over by the time I'm at 60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's actually, I actually do that a little bit too. If I'm doing, like, intervals and, like, threshold stuff.
Yeah.
I'll start counting because I'm like, if I count slower than a second, then, like, I'll get to, 30 seconds, let's say, and then it'll be over before I even get to that.
I don't know.
That's a weird thing I'm telling you, but.
That's part of it too. Because, yeah, I think, like, just sort of giving my mind something else to focus on beyond, like, my burning muscles, and, yeah, be just kind of being like, I'm not going to be in this forever. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And kind of a last thought, what does running mean to you?
Running means a lot to me. Running means,
you know, taking care of myself and my body and my health and my mental well-being. It means community. It means like connecting with folks from different walks of life and different backgrounds. Running is just a part of my life. Like, it's who I am.
It becomes a huge part, once you get into it.
It does. And I do also want to say, like, again, talking a bit about like how the pandemic has shifted it, like it took a bit of a backseat and, you know, like without events and stuff, like not having things to train for, it sort of like shifted. And that goes back to the discussion of flexibility too. Like it's a part of my life. It isn't always going to be a prominent part of my life. And, you know, like for a large chunk of time wasn't, but it's okay too. And I am looking forward to returning to training and regular racing. But yeah, this is where we're at right now. So
yeah,
also enjoying that downtime too.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point for sure. It's it means something different for different people, but also at different times in your life.
Yeah.
You know? But it's always there. However you need it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can't get down on ourselves if we take time off training. You can get back to where you were. You know, some people, they need a break. They need it mentally. They need to put their energy elsewhere.
Yeah.
It could be so many different things, but there's no right way to do it. Like we said before, we're not, you know, professional athletes.
Yeah.
Not getting paid to do this. So it's... you know, take what you can on the day and,
yeah. And kind of going back to that point too, of like, you know, running has a lot of potential in terms of giving back, right? Like raising awareness for issues and, encouraging people to be better, do better, like ways in which we can improve society and the world. And I think that like running, when you feel good yourself, like it's easier to ensure that your community feels cared for as well.
Absolutely. So where can people find out more about you, Michelle?
So I am on Instagram at yo_MK. That's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. I do also want to encourage if people, you know, want to start a Chinatown Runners and they don't have, you know, an active events happening in their own city, that they should do that. Mm-hmm. And that, yeah, if you do, I think like if people see something lacking in their own spaces, that they should just try and start something.
Right. That's, I mean, you said it before too, like, you just got to try. It's good to try something new.
Yeah, it's good to try. It's good to be curious. You know, it's good to... Because also, like, what's the worst that could happen?
Right. Absolutely. We don't know if we don't try.
Exactly.
Well, Michelle, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate all the work you do with Parkdale and for your community and helping to raise awareness for, you know, and educating us as well. And no doubt that you'll affect change in your own community and probably outside of that as well with everything you're doing, and you keep up the good training.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a really fun conversation.
Awesome. Well, I hope you enjoy the rest of your day and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, you too.
Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye. This episode is brought to you by the WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. But seeing as we can't do that in person right now, let's try our best to stay connected through social media. How can you do that? Every Monday, we'll connect through a virtual run. You can go out there at any time of the day and run any distance you choose. When you get home, share your run with us on Instagram by tagging at WRGRuns. And we'll post it in our stories for everyone to see. It's a tough time for everyone, so hopefully this helps us stay motivated to get out there and keep moving. If you want to learn more, visit our website, imarunner.ca, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Hope to see you all soon. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.